Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today's Thursday, April 11th. I'm Stephen Overly. Elise Thomas spends her time digging into the online antics of disinformation networks, particularly a group linked to the Chinese Communist Party called Spamouflage. Now, Elise says that Spamouflage is generally pretty bad at the whole online manipulation thing. None of the content gets much attention, at least until recently.
But as I was kind of in the process of doing that research, I came across a small number of kind of innovations and sort of new tactics that they are trying. And one of them in particular was very concerning.
What she found were a small number of accounts on X, formerly known as Twitter, that were posing as Americans and posting pro-Trump messages, celebrating Donald Trump's primary wins, calling President Biden old and ineffective. And this time, they were starting to get traction.
Sure. I mean, picture your MAGA auntie's Twitter account. It looked a lot like that. They were sort of very difficult to identify because they are really convincing.
For the show today, I called up Elise in Australia, where she works as a senior analyst for the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. We talked about Spamouflage and its latest attempts to meddle in American politics, as well as why these few accounts could actually signal something bigger. Here's our conversation. Well, Elise, welcome to the Politico Tech podcast.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So you've been tracking the online activity of this group called Spamouflage, also known by the names Dragon Bridge and Storm 1376, I believe. What's important to know about them?
I guess the most important thing to know about them is that they are a long-running influence operation campaign that has been supporting the interests of the Chinese Communist Party. There were some indictments by the US Department of Justice, I think early last year, which connected them to a bureau within the Chinese Ministry of Public Security called the 912 Special Projects Working Group. They've been active since about 2017, initially started targeting the Hong Kong protests and sort of pro-democracy Chinese voices, and have sort of gradually expanded to target an array of issues across an array of countries, but particularly focused on the US. The thing to know about Spamouflage is that while they've always historically operated at enormous scale, and we're talking thousands, potentially tens of thousands of accounts across dozens of websites and platforms. So they're active on all of the major social media platforms. They're active on Twitter. They're active on Facebook. They're active on YouTube, Reddit, Medium. They're also active on like Quora and TripAdvisor and all sorts of like strange little niche sites. I suspect the contractors who are behind this are probably paid per post. And so it's in their interest to just post everywhere and anywhere all the time.
Oh, interesting.
But despite being massive, they've always been incredibly ineffective. You know, they're very, very bad at generating real engagement from real people. And part of that has been to do with their tactics, the way that they operate. They're quite an insular sort of a network. So accounts within the network will engage with each other, but they won't engage outwards towards real users. And part of that has been that their content has been like really poorly targeted, poorly crafted, not very appealing to authentic users, particularly authentic American users.
I know that they're known for spreading these pro-CCP messages, but lately, as you've written, they've started posing as Americans on Twitter, right? Formerly known as X, and sort of posting content about former President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden. What exactly did you find?
They have been targeting kind of the US elections for quite a while. So like I wrote a piece earlier this year, sort of looking at some of the narratives that they were using to talk about the US elections and the two likely presidential candidates, but using sort of those generic Spamouflage tactics. And so getting the same level of like minimal to no engagement from real people. But as I was kind of in the process of doing that research, I came across a small number of kind of innovations and sort of new tactics that they are trying. And one of them in particular was very concerning. So I found a very small number of accounts which were posing convincingly as Americans, like convincingly as Trump supporters, as sort of, you know, MAGA, American flag type accounts. And they were engaging with real users. They were sort of building a following of real users using like follow back trains, which is sort of where, you know, users kind of mutually agree to follow each other back to each boost their own audience. And so that they were building up this like authentic audience. And then they were posting a lot of you know, pro-Trump memes and pro-Trump news and sort of like anti-woke stuff and all of this content, which is sort of incredibly appealing to that specific audience that they were going for. And they were getting real engagement, what looked like real engagement from real people in like significant numbers, including incredibly from Alex Jones once. And that is a real shift and very concerning. As I said, it was only a very small number of accounts we found that were doing this. But obviously you kind of pair up the fact that these accounts were quite hard to detect with the fact that we know this is an actor that likes to operate at massive scale. And it would be quite out of character for them to only have a small number of accounts doing something like this. I mean, that starts to look pretty concerning.
Were there any sort of obvious reason for this shift? Is it just the fact that, you know, we're now kind of in the midst of a presidential election cycle that's already pretty divisive? Or is there a reason why they've changed tactics?
I mean, so the question that I'm sort of often asked about the spamouflage, once I kind of explain what it is and how useless it's been, is like why they continue doing it. And sort of generally the answer that I have for that is like fundamentally this is a sneaky government communications campaign, and it would hardly be the first government project to keep running for years despite not achieving very much. But what I'm saying is that they needed to innovate. It wasn't working. And so like they have been like experimenting here and there with new tactics. I don't know why they've made this specific shift now. They may have just suddenly realized that this works, you know, like there may have been sort of someone in that team who sort of had a look and sort of maybe had a better cultural grasp of what that audience needed and decided to try something new. And it looks like it's working. It is quite a similar tactic to what we've seen from Russian influence actors.
That was my thought, too. It felt very much like Russia's 2016 playbook.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of other actors who will do something similar to this. Like, I don't think we should necessarily leap to the conclusion that means they're copying Russia. It may be that they sort of independently realize that this is actually a really easy, effective, very cheap. Like, they don't have to make this content. Most of it, they're mostly just like reposting stuff from other places. This is, you know, in some ways the most cost-effective way to do it. So, you know, like it makes sense from their perspective to make this shift.
A lot of us obviously have not seen these posts that you have. Can you talk me through an example or two of kind of the material that you came across?
Sure. I mean, picture your MAGA auntie's Twitter account. It looked a lot like that, you know, like they're sort of like almost, they were sort of very difficult to identify because they are really convincing. So a few days after the Super Tuesday vote, for example, like one of them posted just a really big picture of Trump and wrote like a vote for Trump is a vote for America. Or there'd be sort of like, you know, posts about sort of migrants coming in over the border, and, you know, the text of the post would be something about Biden losing control of the border. Or, you know, like a post about being critical of drag queen story hours, for example, or sort of other kinds of sort of LGBTQ related criticisms. So like they were hitting on all of those culture war topics. And sort of, yeah, promoting like a strongly pro-Trump and anti-Biden stance.
I believe you also found some AI-generated images as well. Am I right about that? And what exactly did those show?
They've been using AI-generated images for probably at least a year. And they're sort of used as kind of illustrations rather than sort of necessarily being like deepfakes where they're trying to fool anybody into believing that this is like a real photo. So they'll tweet out some message about Biden is too old and then have a AI-generated image of Biden in a wheelchair. It's that sort of level of use of AI. What we haven't seen to date, as far as I'm aware, is the use of AI-generated text. I have been waiting for that to happen because it just seems like a logical next step for them. But so far, I haven't seen it. You know, and that always raises the question of, like, have we not seen it because they're not doing it, or have we not seen it because it's actually quite good?
We'll be right back. And have you studied this group's postings on any other social networks as well? Like, are they active on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, especially given, you know, all the concerns certainly in the U.S. that is sort of a platform that's vulnerable to Chinese influence?
Yeah, I mean, so like as I mentioned earlier, they're active on dozens and dozens and dozens of platforms. I think Meta did a big takedown in August last year. And I think in that report, they said they found them on over 50 sites. So yeah, we've definitely seen them across the Meta platforms, and YouTube, also Medium is quite a big one. I haven't personally seen them on TikTok, but I haven't been looking. It wouldn't surprise me if they are there. Sort of, I don't want to make any sweeping statements about what they're doing on TikTok. There was in this most recent group of accounts I found that was sort of were posing as Americans, there was one account there that had an associated TikTok account, but it was only one that I found.
You know, I know that sort of trying to ascertain the motives of these actors can sometimes be a little bit murky, but I am curious, you know, the fact that these accounts are especially critical of President Biden and seem to favor former President Trump. How much can you sort of extrapolate from that in terms of China's larger motives here around the U.S. election?
Look, so we, like I said, we don't know what we don't know. So I've been, you know, quite careful when talking about this to make the point they could absolutely be doing this on the other side as well.
Sure.
We just haven't found those accounts yet. So what we can say is that these accounts were very, very supportive of former President Trump and very critical of current President Biden. The previous research that I did looking at what kind of the more generic spamouflage accounts were doing did find that they were, again, spreading narratives that were negative about Biden and somewhat ambivalent about Trump. Like some of the, you know, they sort of had narratives that could be read both ways. So they sort of have a narrative that is like Trump is a rebel, right? And, you know, if you are somebody working for the CCP, that might be a negative thing. But if you are a Trump fan, that's probably a positive. So sort of like those sorts of kind of ambiguous narratives where it wasn't clearly negative, but we certainly can't say that they are supporting Trump necessarily because it's totally possible this is happening on the other side.
You know, you were saying earlier that this group kind of operates by volume or has, right, and putting out a lot of content. And the material related to the U.S. election seems to be sort of a small subset of that. I wonder, two questions really. One, have you gotten a sense yet of how much traction it has gotten among real people? And how much cause for concern, I guess, is there at this point about any influence this might ultimately have?
These, yeah, small number of MAGAflage accounts, so are accounts that were posing convincingly as MAGA supporters, they were getting a reasonable amount of engagement, but we're still talking like hundreds or like maybe thousands of people at most. And also like, you know, all they're doing necessarily is like scrolling past a post on X, you know, or sort of liking a post or like even resharing a post. That doesn't mean that it's going to change their mind, particularly because like obviously the audiences they're appealing to are audiences who are already pro-Trump, right? So it's not like they're changing anybody's mind about who to vote for. Where I do think potentially this approach could make a difference is in sort of gradually bringing in narratives that support the interests of the CCP in a way that is much more compelling to real Americans than some of their previous attempts. So like one example of this that I have in the report is around the new Huawei phone that Huawei put out last year. And so like Spamouflage kind of ran a sort of generic campaign around sort of how great this phone was. And it was, you know, a victory for China, showing, you know, triumph over the US attempts to block China's access to high grade chips. And that got like no traction whatsoever. Like nobody was interested. These accounts sort of had that same kind of narrative about how great the phone was, but they wrapped it up in a partisan framing, sort of like presenting it as a failure of Biden, that Huawei had been able to make this fantastic phone. And they got a reasonable amount of traction on that. It was sort of, from memory, it was something in the region of sort of 600-ish likes on that post. The accounts have been taken down now, so we can't really go back and check. But sort of, I think that's kind of a good example of how this approach can help to make those sort of pro-CCP narratives more appealing to this audience. I guess maybe kind of just the other point to kind of come back to is the role of the American fringe media in boosting these sorts of narratives. We've seen Russian actors, Russian state actors in particular, sort of do a really, really good job of co-opting parts of the US fringe media into carrying water for them, into sort of like spreading their narratives and sort of promoting, you know, disinformation about Ukraine, for example. They've done that phenomenally well, frankly. And I think the example that we had of Alex Jones retweeting one of these accounts, which was actually sharing a clip from Russia Today, so sharing Russian propaganda, is, you know, an example. And, you know, like, to be clear, like, I don't think Alex Jones had any idea that this was a CCP influence operation. You know, like, I have no idea how he came across this tweet, but I think it was an interesting example of the ways in which the biases of particularly that corner of the internet can be leveraged by state actors to then boost their narratives to a very big audience. I think that is definitely something that we need to keep in mind and keep a watch for.
I think that's such an interesting point. The idea that, particularly, you know, in the U.S., what we would call the far right or considered to be the far right may be particularly vulnerable to this kind of influence because they're already predispositioned to some of these narratives that they're putting out there, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we've seen the Kremlin do just, like I said, a phenomenal job of cultivating this particular segment of the internet over a period of several years and sort of really intensifying in the last couple of years and sort of culminating in the, you know, Tucker Carlson sitting down with Vladimir Putin. And it's not inconceivable, I think, that China would at least aim to follow a similar path, having seen how well it's worked for Russia. But that's pure speculation. We don't know that they're intentionally copying Russia. But if I were them, like, that's a pretty good way to do it.
You've mentioned accounts getting taken down and things like that. Is there an effective playbook for countering this type of interference and misinformation? You know, is it just sort of removing these accounts, or is there something more that either tech companies or U.S. government officials could be doing here?
Honestly, I think when it comes to sort of the generic camouflage accounts, just take them down. Like, nobody's seeing them. Nobody's engaging with them. They're not really like causing much impact. Like, I think actually just removing those is fine. If we do start to see them sort of taking this approach with the sort of accounts that look like real MAGA users, that's going to be a lot more complicated because it will be much more difficult, specifically for outside researchers like me and my colleagues, to identify these accounts. We're going to be really reliant on the social media platforms to be very vigilant and to sort of use the data that they have behind the scenes, things like IP addresses that might help them to connect these accounts and then sort of track them back to where they're coming from. So, like, I think a lot of the onus for this actually does rest on the social media platforms to sort of be very on the ball and like very on the lookout for this. Look, I think the first step is to figure out how big the problem is. So that question that I mentioned earlier around sort of is it the case that there were only these few accounts, or is it the case that there are potentially a much larger number of accounts doing this and they're just so well disguised that we're not picking them up? So I think that really has to be the first step. And when you sort of understand the scale of the problem, then you can sort of start to think about, like, what do you do after that?
Well, Elise, listen, appreciate you coming on Politico Tech to talk about your work.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.